This free program is paid for by the listeners of WBAI New York. If you're not already a member, think about joining us to help keep free speech alive.
Hola, pues apenas he regresado de 6 semanas en Perú y estoy muy feliz que, al contrario a los rumores, informativo la edición de las noticias en español existe todavía en esta emisora WBAI. Y ahora es medianoche en punto aquí en Nueva York y por eso es tiempo para esto. Hola. Okay, technical difficulties, excuse me. Here we go.
Moorish. Orthodox. Radio. Crusade. Anarchism for the global city. Radical environmentalism for the concrete jungle. Esoteric explorations of the secret history of rebel culture. The Moorish Orthodox Radio Crusade. Every Tuesday at midnight after the news, only on listener-supported, non-commercial WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City. Be there.
Loca, porque siempre perdoné todas tus mentiras. segundo para que saques muchidad, arrancando el chorrito si no te salgo la conciencia sucia. Para ti, Karina, admiro Loraico, con cariño. Por eso te digo ahora, si aquí tú no más llegaste, no quiero saber más de ti, arrancando más cholito. Deje de mi lado, te doy 30 segundos, para que saques tu chival, arrancando más cholito, si no te salgo la conciencia sucia. Por eso te digo ahora, si aquí tú no más llegaste, no quiero saber más de ti, arrancando más cholito. Deje de mi lado, te doy 30 segundos, para que saques tu chival, arrancando más cholito, si no te salgo la conciencia sucia.
Right, opening up with a genuine jungle cumbia from Peru here on the Moorish Orthodox Radio Crusade on listener-supported, listener-supported non-commercial 99.5 FM here in New York, WBAI. I am Bill Weinberg, just back from Peru. Big thanks and shout-out to Anne-Marie Hendrickson for filling in for me while I was away, and I trust that she provided lots of very interesting and entertaining and didactic programming, as she always does. But I'm going to tell you about how I spent my summer vacation, sort of a working vacation, in Peru. Past 6 weeks, actually, it's not summer down there, it's winter down there. It was kind of chilly sometimes, but not in the jungle, which is where this music we opened up from is. It's actually from an artist by the name of Anoshka, who is a Harakmut indigenous leader from a community by the name of Masai Nawa, which is one of several communities which border the Amara Kaeri Communal Reserve, which was established to protect the ancestral lands and traditional way of life of the Harakmut indigenous people in the rainforest of Madre de Dios department in the southern Peruvian Amazon. And despite the this designation of this communal reserve after a long campaign of protest by the indigenous communities down there, in 2002, finally the reserve was declared, but with a loophole, which essentially allows the Peruvian state, the Peruvian central government, to turn over the parts of the reserve to oil companies, to extractive resource industries. Particularly, oil is really what's at stake here. Perhaps natural gas, primarily oil. Above the protests of the indigenous communities, which on whose behalf the reserve was ostensibly established, and whose leaders are ostensibly involved in the maintenance and the administration of the reserve. So the reserve is surrounded by these titled indigenous communities, and the reserve itself allegedly officially belongs to the state, allegedly with the participation, as I say, in its administration by the titled communities that surround it, that border it. The state has gone over the head of the communities. The communities are somewhat divided, but largely the leadership of the communities opposes the oil contract, which has been awarded in the Amara Kaieri Communal Reserve to one Hunt Oil Company of Dallas, Texas. The famous Hunt Oil family of Dallas, right? Major contributors to the Bush campaign and so on and so forth. One of several very, very controversial oil contracts which have been granted by the Peruvian state in the Amazon. And this was really the big issue behind the indigenous uprising, which took place in Peru earlier this year and has resulted in unprecedented political developments in the country. Basically, indigenous leaders from the Amazon, traditionally the most excluded and marginalized part of the country, and the most excluded and marginalized peoples within that part of the country, are now dialoguing, you know, they're now sitting down at the dialogue table face to face with cabinet ministers in Lima, something which was really unimaginable just as recently as 6 months ago, I would say. So it's been a real political victory and a very inspiring one, about which I'll have more to say shortly. But one of the many outstanding issues which are unresolved, which is what the dialogue is all about, is all of these oil contracts which have been granted on indigenous lands in the rainforest. The cumbia artist who we just heard, Anoshka, who is once again a Harakmut traditional indigenous leader from her community in one of the 10 communities, one of the 10 titled Harakmut communities bordering the Amara Kaieri Communal Reserve in Madre de Dios Department in the southern Peruvian Amazon. I met her, and she gave me a copy of her disc. And you could hear her there giving a shout-out to Puerto Maldonado, which is where I met her. It's the capital of Madre de Dios Department. It's a town of around 50,000 on the Rio Madre de Dios. I was there to attend a meeting of the indigenous leaders from these 10 communities, which are going to be impacted by the Hunt Oil contract, which was taking place at the offices of a group called FENAMAD, which is the Native Federation of the Rio Madre de Dios, FENAMAD, where they were meeting with representatives from Hunt Oil. And they finally released a statement at the end of the meeting rejecting the Hunt Oil contract and imposing a deadline for Hunt Oil to leave the reserve before the Indians physically expel them, okay? Now, that deadline is actually already passed, so I need to get back in touch with my friends in Peru and see what exactly is happening. But they are very, very serious about not allowing this oil contract to go ahead. So as I say, the leaders are a little bit divided. Some of them have been swayed by the company's promises of monetary reimbursement for the activities which will take place on their land. The majority, enough of a majority so that FENAMAD issued this statement and went to court, by the way, seeking an injunction against the oil operations on the grounds that the impacted communities have not been consulted in violation of international norms, particularly ILO 169, that's International Labor Organization Resolution 169 on the rights of indigenous peoples. They have the right to be consulted on development decisions concerning their lands. So at this meeting, which I attended, Anoshka was the most intransigent of all of the Harakhmut leaders, had the strongest words to the representatives from Hunt Oil who were there in rejection of their activities on the reserve. And Anoshka, in addition to being a traditional Harakhmut indigenous leader and the most intransigent spokesman or spokesperson, if you will, in opposition to the Hunt Oil contract, is also a cumbia artist, as we just heard, and she's on the local circuit in Puerto Maldonado and surrounding jungle towns, making the cumbia scene with her band, which I believe she just operates under the name of Anoshka. So, a big shout out to Anoshka if you're listening tonight on the internet. Mi amiga, saludos a Anoshka y todos mis amigos de Fenamad in Puerto Maldonado. And, one of the amazing things about what I just witnessed in Peru, and actually most of the real action was already over by the time I got down there, but it was still extremely inspiring, and it's flashing me right back to 1994 and the immediate aftermath of the Zapatista uprising in Chiapas in southern Mexico. So many clear analogies. Those of you who have remember will recall that in 1993, in preparation for NAFTA, the free trade agreement with the United States, President Carlos Salinas pushed through the Mexican Congress a constitutional reform which called for the privatization of the communal lands of the indigenous peoples and the peasants of Mexico, the titled communal lands, and which would essentially mean, turning them over mostly to agribusiness, also to oil interests and so on. And this sparked the Zapatista uprising. They explicitly said that they decided to take up arms when they took up arms, directly in response to this constitutional reform, which would mean the privatization of their communally held lands of indígenas and campesinos throughout Mexico. And in the immediate aftermath of the uprising, the government realized that they were losing control of Mexico and that there could be a general revolutionary movement sweeping across the country if they continued to use repression. So after a pretty grave toll in human lives, the government blinked and sat down at the dialogue table with the Zapatistas, once again, with the most marginalized, excluded people from the most marginalized, excluded part of the country. That is to say, the Maya indigenous peoples from the rainforests of Chiapas. Which, again, nobody would have anticipated, even just, even just weeks before the Zapatista uprising, nobody would have anticipated that anything like that would ever happen. And it happened. And the dialogue went on for years, as a matter of fact. The constitutional reform was never actually overturned. The government tried to arrive at some compromise measures, and things are pretty much at a stalemate now on that front. But the Zapatistas continue to control their autonomous zones in the jungles of Chiapas, and they continue to exist as a movement, and they haven't been crushed, and they still have their arms, but they are also observing a ceasefire, and they don't actually use their arms. So now we fast forward to 2008. In January of 2008, just as NAFTA took effect in January of New Year's Day of 1994, the free trade agreement with Peru, between the United States and Peru, took effect in January of 2008, and the president of Peru, Alan Garcia, was granted special powers by Congress, by the Peruvian Congress, to pass what are known as legislative decrees, which have the force of law, but they don't actually have to be passed by Congress. They're just promulgated by the president. He just, you know, writes them up and signs them, and that's it. They're law. And then Congress can have the power to review them after the fact and repeal them after the fact. But Congress doesn't have to initially pass them. So this was really challenging to figure this out and to untangle this whole web of, well, actually there were 100 legislative decrees which were promulgated by Garcia in preparation, ostensibly in preparation for the free trade agreement, but in actuality, the net effect of these decrees was to turn over the Peruvian Amazon rainforest to the oil industry. I mean, that's essentially what their intent was, very, very clearly. This resulted in a indigenous uprising in the rainforest last year, beginning, I believe, in August of 2008, and these are people who are even more excluded than the Zapatistas. The Zapatistas in the rainforest of Chiapas, well, they're actually, I mean, they're settlers in the rainforest. They're people who come from the highlands, forced out of their traditional lands by the cattle oligarchy and forced to settle in the rainforest. Whereas the peoples who led the uprising in or the PARO, as they call it, were protest campaign in the Peruvian rainforest beginning last year, where they were the indigenous inhabitants of the rainforest, the Harakmut people and the Machagenga people and the Ashaninka people. These are the actual indigenous inhabitants of the rainforest, not the settlers, who are mostly Quechua peoples who have come from the highlands in search of better land. And as you can imagine, you know, traditionally the settlers and the indigenous peoples of the rainforest, I mean, they're all indigenous, right? I mean, the Quechuas from the highlands are indigenous too, but they're distinct indigenous people, and they're highland indigenous people who are colonists in the rainforest. So as you can imagine, you know, there's been a great deal of tension between these two groups over the years. But it's very interesting what happened, right? Because, I mean, they all oppose the free trade agreement, right? The campesinos, the Quechua campesinos who are, you know, carving up the rainforest of slash and burn agriculture, they recognize that the free trade agreement is against their interest as well. And certainly the indigenous peoples of the rainforest recognize that these legislative decrees were all about turning their lands over to the international oil cartel. So they actually made common cause. But it was the indigenous peoples of the rainforest who were really at the leadership of the PARO, or the protest campaign, which began, as I say, I believe it was August of last year, August of 2008. And the initial legislative decree, which they demanded be overturned. I mean, ultimately, there's a lot of them that they want overturned. So far, I believe 4 of them have been overturned. And the first 2 last year were 1015 and 1073, which concerned the regulations for the privatization. Once again, same issue as in Mexico 15 years ago. For the privatization of communally titled indigenous lands, essentially making it easier for them to be privatized. It used to be a 50% plus one vote, and the legislative decree turned of all of the members of all of the voting members of the community, 50% plus one vote of all of the voting members of the community. The legislative decree 1015 turned it into a simple, I've got that wrong. It used to be a two-thirds majority vote, and then 1015 turned it into a simple majority vote, 50% plus one, right? So, and not of of all of the voting community members, but only of those who vote. A very distinctive, only those who actually show up to cast their vote. A very, very important distinction. Right. So changing it from a two-thirds majority of all the voting members of the community to a 50% plus one majority of just those who happened to show up that day to cast their votes. So that was the first legislative decree that they wanted overturned. And so that was 1015, and then that was rewritten as 1073, which I believe turned it back to a two-thirds majority in response to the protest, but keeping in the, only those who show up to vote as opposed to all of the voting members of the community. So there was all these protests last year, and finally Garcia capitulated, and both 1015 and its revised version, 1073, were overturned in a big victory. And the indigenous leaders decided to chill out for a while and give the government time to respond to the rest of their demands, which were for some other of the legislative decrees to be overturned. And the government didn't. So in April of this year, they relaunched the PARO, the protest campaign, which meant, as last year, once again, it's fair to call it an uprising, although they did not use firearms. This is very significant. They blocked the roads throughout the Amazon region. They blocked the rivers. They seized the oil and gas installations, shut down the pipelines, seized the hydroelectric installations, etc. They were armed with machetes and spears and bows and arrows and blowguns, but not with firearms. Right. And they didn't actually, use their weapons except in a show of force to show that they were ready to defend themselves if they were attacked by the security forces. And indeed, on June 5th of this year, they were at a place called Bagua in the northern Amazonas department. They were, in fact, attacked by the Peruvian National Police, who opened fire on a roadblock, and Indians defended themselves, once again, with their spears and their machetes, and some of them actually managed to wrestle rifles away from the police and return fire. And by the time it was all over, and the violence actually continued for a few days after that, by the time it was all over, some 30 were dead. The exact numbers are still not clear. And how many of them were police and how many of them were indigenous protesters and how many of them were just indigenous residents of the region who were not even involved in the protest but were just caught in the crossfire. All of this is still being debated. And in fact, the government has been forced. One of the demands which the Garcia administration has capitulated to is the government has been forced to appoint a independent investigative commission, which includes leaders chosen by the indigenous leadership, by ADACEP, which is the Pan-Amazonian Indigenous Alliance in Peru. Stands for the Association for the Integral Development of the Peruvian Rainforest, if memory serves. Their leaders get to choose some of the members of the commission as well. So hopefully, when it turns in its results at the end of the year, we'll have a clearer picture of what actually happened at Bagua on June 5th. But right now, it's very, very murky. It certainly is clear that indigenous protesters were fired upon by the security forces, by the Peruvian National Police, and that a lot of people died. And immediately after this, there was a huge outcry. As in Mexico 15 years ago, the movement began to spread. And there were marches in solidarity and roadblocks and militant actions. But once again, unarmed civil militant actions, not militant in the sense of armed, but militant in the sense of uncompromising and intransigent and actually, blocking roads and so on, engaging in direct action, not merely protest. Or symbolic protest. began to spread to the highlands, began to spread to the Sierra, to the Quechua communities, and even began to spread to the urban areas of Peru. And for instance, when transit fare hikes were instated in Lima, there was a general strike which lasted for a couple of days, pretty much shut down the city. And one of their demands was, solidarity with the indigenous peoples of the Amazon and embracing their demands and adding their demands to their own, which of opposition to the fare hike and, you know, general opposition to the free trade agreement and so on. So the movement was beginning to spread across Peru. And once again, as in Mexico 15 years ago, the government blinked and agreed to a dialogue with the indigenous leadership. Quite remarkable development. So now, you know, you've actually got, I saw this. I was at the offices of ADESEP when their leaders were preparing to go meet with the Minister of Agriculture. And they actually, you know, put on their traditional regalia, their headdresses and their robes and their face paint. And they don't always, you know, when they're hanging out in Lima, they don't always, look like that. But just to make the point, you know, they were going to meet with the Minister of Agriculture. You know, they put on their headdresses and their face paint and their traditional robes. And before they got onto the bus that had been chartered for them to take them to the agriculture ministry. So, Pretty amazing development. It's 12:31 in the morning here on listener-supported, non-commercial, WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City. This is the Moorish Orthodox Radio Crusade. My name is Bill Weinberg, back after 6 weeks in Peru, during which time you were left in the able hands of Anne-Marie Hendrickson, who will be back on these airwaves soon, I hope, because I would like to hear her voice once again as well. So, because I missed her shows. I caught a little bit of one or two of them on the internet in Peru, but not as much as I would have liked to. So, to continue with the story, let me take a hit of water here. Excuse me. Suffering from just a little bit of a cold my last couple of days in Peru. I was fine throughout the trip. My last couple of days in Peru, I started coming down with a little bit of a cold when I was way, way up in the mountains. But I'm getting ahead of myself. Let me stick to the rainforest angle and before I tell you about the rest of my adventures in Peru. So once again, in a sort of a replay of what happened last year, two of the most egregious of these legislative decrees, two more, just as last year two were overturned, another two were overturned this year by the Peruvian Congress after the Bagua massacre. And that was 1090 and 1064. 1090 was really the most insidious of the lot because it essentially... Okay, under the Peruvian Constitution, all subsoil resources belong to the state, regardless of who holds title to the land, right? So the state can go over the heads of the indigenous communities and and give out, you know, contracts for oil or mineral resources, but the company has got to arrive at some kind of compensation deal with the affected communities. And what 1090 allowed them to do was to work out those compensation deals, not with the communities themselves, but with the central government. So, you know, Hunt Oil or whoever, can come in. And believe me, the majors want to get back in. Right now, it's minnows, so to speak, like Hunt Oil and Spain's Repsol and the Anglo-French company Perenco. These are the ones which are, you know, heading into the Peruvian oil rush in the rainforest here. But the majors would like to get back in. They've been a little bit gun-shy of Peru for the past 20 years or so because of instability. But they want to get back in, and certainly Alan Garcia wants them back in very bad. You know, Shell and Exxon and Texaco and all the others which are operating in Ecuador. And Garcia is bitterly, bitterly jealous of that, that, you know, Peru's traditional enemy, Ecuador, is getting, you know, all these big fat, contracts from the oil majors. And Peru is not, because they've had all these problems with instability over the years. Well, this is really what all of these 100 legislative decrees were about, was about getting the big oil majors, the big cartel, back into the Peruvian Amazon. So where was I going with this? Right. So under 1090, the oil companies could come in, and instead of negotiating the compensation deal with the affected communities, they could sit down and completely bypass the affected communities and work out the compensation deal with the government. And the government and the oil company would get together and decide how much the local community would get in compensation for, you know, their lands being raped. So, of course, the indigenous leaders did not accept this, and this was one of the two which were overturned this summer. Of course, it's their winter down in Peru, but from our perspective, this summer. So the other one was, that was 1090, which allowed the oil companies to work out compensation deals for the affected communities, not with the communities, but with the government. That was overturned, thank goodness. The other one which was overturned was 1064, which concerns which reforms the forestry law, or would have when for the time that it was in power, did reform the forestry law in Peru. Under the law, forested lands cannot be privatized, even if whether they're state lands or whether they're titled community lands. If they've got forest cover, they can't be privatized. And even if they don't have forest cover, even if they've been deforested, but they were originally forest and they have the potential to recover, they can't be privatized. Concessions can be allowed on them, but they can't actually, you know, if the government decides to allow an oil company to operate there, there can be concessions, but they can't actually be sold off. What 1064 did was allowed deforested lands to be removed from the forest protection system and allow them to actually be privatized. And of course, you know, there's a lot of deforested land, right? After everything which has been going on in the Peruvian Amazon for the past 25 years with peasant colonization and oil companies and gas companies and so on. There's a lot of deforested land, right? So, but a lot of it can recover. And a lot of it would have fallen under this category. All right, so both of those were overturned. 1090 and 1064 were overturned. The two major ones, which have not yet been overturned, which ADECEP is still negotiating with the Peruvian government about, are 1062 and 994. 1062 affects lands which are not yet titled to indigenous communities, but they're in the process of trying to get them titled, and allows them to be titled as individual parcels, fee simple, so to speak, which can be, you know, freely bought or sold, as opposed to being titled to the community as a whole in perpetuity. So it's essentially trying to do away with, you know, the whole form of communal indigenous entitled titled lands. So that's one which the indigenous leaders are still arguing with the government about, trying to get it overturned, or maybe they're going to work out some kind of reform, some kind of compromise. I don't know, but they're talking about it. That's one of the ones which they're talking about. The other, 994, concerns tierras eriazas. This was a word I was not familiar with until I went to Peru this time. Tierras eriazas are lands which are not suitable for agriculture because of water, either one way or another, either not enough of it or too much of it. Peru's coast is very, very dry, and the rainforest is very, very wet, and you've got the Sierra, the mountains in between the two. So on the coast and in the rainforest, you know, you've got an awful lot of land which falls into this category of tierras arriadas. And under this decree, these lands would once again be subject to privatization and removal from the system of forestry protection. So they're also still arguing about that in at the dialogue table in Lima. And the other issues which are outstanding are they want the charges dropped against their indigenous leaders who were in the wake of the violence back in June are now, you know, facing charges, including Alberto Pizango, the former leader of EDASEP, who was taken exile with two of his comrades in Nicaragua. There's also several other EDASEP leaders who were in hiding, and a few who were in custody, in prison, and one who is in the hospital. And probably, if he recovers and is removed from the hospital, he's probably going to be immediately transferred to a prison. So they want the charges dropped against their leaders, and they want the and they just got, apparently, an investigative commission into what actually happened at Bagua. The final issue is the one which we started out talking about, which is the remaining oil contracts in the reserves which have been established. Now, there's two kinds of reserves. This is a very interesting point. Two kinds of reserves. One are reserves such as the Amaracaeri communal reserve, which was the one that I was particularly looking into in Madre de Dios department in the southern Amazon, which are established for the usufruct rights, the use and enjoyment, hunting and gathering and so on, of and also protecting their watersheds, right? Protecting the sources of the rivers, protecting the waters of titled indigenous communities which border the reserves on the on the outside. The other kind are reserves which have been established for what they call communities in voluntary isolation. We used to call them uncontacted peoples, but it's a little bit oversimplified to say they've been uncontacted. I mean, they know that industrial civilization exists. They know that it's encroaching upon their lands, and they know they don't want to have anything to do with it because it's going to, you know, spell their end, probably, you know, the end of their way of life and possibly the end of their actual physical existence if they fall prey to diseases which they don't have any immunities to and so on. So they retreat deeper into the jungle. They are considered to be communities in voluntary isolation. And Garcia, the president, denies that these peoples exist. Very convenient for him to do so, but the indigenous leadership of EDASEP insists that, in fact, they do exist. And there are probably, in fact, there certainly are, communities which are sort of in between, communities which of indigenous peoples who do have contact with the outside world and have contact with the EDASEP leadership and have contact with, non-indigenous peoples and the internet and everything, but also have contact with the isolated peoples, or at least have contact with people who have people with the have contact with the isolated peoples, right? So we're pretty sure that these peoples in isolation do exist, and a few reserves have been under international pressure and under pressure from EDASEP established for the protection of these isolated communities. The government has also gone ahead and allowed for oil contracts to operate within these reserves as well. So this is definitely not a good thing. This is something to be opposed. And ADASEP is, in fact, opposing it. So these are the outstanding issues, which they're continuing to discuss at the dialogue table in Lima. We'll have a little bit more to say about this shortly. Why don't we hear, why don't we hear just one more jungle cumbia from Anoushka, and then maybe we will move the discussion from the Amazon rainforest of Peru up into the High Sierra. And I'll tell you a little bit about the rest of my trip, what I did on my summer vacation. Let's hear one more jungle cumbia from Anoushka. Here, let's hear cut 7. I like that one.
Oye, y por siempre te canta Anoushka este Puerto Maldonado y para mi pueblo querido Mazenagua. Y para Timoteo Irey, Clemente, David, Juan, con todo mi amor. Desde que te fuiste de mi lado, amor.
Another hot jungle cumbia from Anoushka, from Puerto Maldonado in Madre de Dios department in the Peruvian Amazon. Yeah. So, you know, the amazing thing about it, what really gives me a real shot of hope at a time when I really needed some, is, you know, that I don't know how completely the how complete the victory is going to be. As I say, you know, there are still several of these atrocious legislative decrees which the government has not yet overturned. And there are still several oil contracts which are apparently moving ahead despite legal challenges and pledges of resistance from the indigenous inhabitants of the rainforest on their traditional lands and on these reserves which have been established to protect their traditional way of life. But so we'll see, you know, we'll see how it works out. Now, the government is supposed to... by the end of the year, the government is supposed to turn in both, the independent commission, which has been established to look into the Bagua massacre, is supposed to hand in its results, and the Garcia administration is supposed to come up in, allegedly, you know, with the input of ADACEP, the Indigenous Alliance, with a plan for the sustainable development of the... of the Amazon region in Peru. Now, I don't really see how ADACEP and the Garcia administration are going to agree on very much, because, I mean, they've just got diametrically opposed views about everything. I mean, you know, the Garcia administration really wants the oil majors in the Amazon. He just really wants to turn the whole Amazon over to the oil companies. And the indigenous leaders don't want any oil contracts in the Amazon at all, you know. And they want, you know, much more land, either directly titled to indigenous communities or turned over to, you know, reserves for, you know, people's involuntary isolation and so on, who Garcia denies even exist. So it's hard to imagine how they're going to come up with a plan, but we'll continue to watch it very closely, and we'll continue to report back as long as we continue to have access to these airwaves. On listener-supported, non-commercial, WBAI 99.5 FM, which is what this is. My name is Bill Weinberg. It's the Moorish Orthodox Radio Crusade, giving the station break 10 minutes early at 9 minutes of 1 o'clock in the morning, which would make it 12:51 in the a.m. here in New York City, WBAI 99.5 FM. So we'll continue to watch it very closely. But once again, the inspiring thing about it is that, you know, the worst of these legislative decrees, the ones which really would have just, you know, wholesale, you know, turned over indigenous lands to the oil companies and just spelled the end to the whole system of protection of indigenous lands, which has been established as a result of, you know, a generation or more of indigenous struggle in Peru, just would have been done away with. The worst of those legislative decrees have been overturned. So already, you know, it's been a real victory. And as in Mexico 15 years ago, you know, all these, you know, unprecedented alliances started forming between the indigenous peoples in the rainforest and the Quechua campesinos in the Sierra, and even the Quechua campesinos who were settlers in the rainforest and have been traditionally pitted against the indigenous peoples in the rainforest, and even with the urban workers in Lima. Pretty amazing. And the amazing thing about it is that they managed to achieve all of this, you know, without actually taking up arms. I mean, it wasn't, it's not fair to say that it was exactly an unarmed movement, because once again, they had their, you know, they had their spears and their machetes, but they didn't actually, you know, take up arms. They defended themselves when attacked, but they didn't actually take up arms. So, to me, this is a real tremendous moral victory. You know, they were able to achieve as much as they did. achieve and are continuing to achieve. It's just a tremendous moral victory. And it just gives me this whole sense of deja vu, and I'm feeling nearly as I've got nearly as much of a sense of renewed optimism at a time when I really needed it as I did in the immediate aftermath of the Levantamiento Zapatista in 1994. So we'll continue to watch this situation very, very closely. So after I finished my work in the rainforest, and I'll have, by the way, more to say about, I think probably next week, might keep going on the Peruvian tip. Have a little bit more to say about Peru next week, because there's some stuff which I'm not going to have time to talk about tonight. And I've also got some music which I'm not going to have time to play tonight. So maybe we'll keep going with Peru next week. But I might actually play some interviews which I did next week, even though they're in Spanish. Play at least a little bit of some interviews which I did. That's what I'm thinking now. But anyway, let me not jump ahead of myself. After I had finished my work, by the way, my work on this is going to be appearing in, hopefully, in the forthcoming issue of NACLA Report on the Americas. That's North American Congress on Latin America. NACLA Report on the Americas should be in the issue, which is going to be out by year's end. so look for it at your local newsstand. Actually, your local newsstand probably doesn't carry it, so look for it at St. Mark's Books or Blue Stockings or someplace like that. And NACLA is in a financial crisis, as just about all print media are, so we hope they survive. Go buy the new issue of NACLA Report when it comes out and read my story. NACLA needs your money, and they're a really, really vital institution. I would hate to lose NACLA, just as I would hate to lose WBAI. Please support your struggling alternative media. Also, shorter versions of my reports from Peru appear on my website, of course, World War IV Report. That's www.4report.com. That's 4 as in an Arabic numeral. 4, not a Roman numeral, but an Arabic numeral, 4, www.4report.com. You can just click where it says, on the side panel, you'll see that I've got the world broken up by regions. So if you click on Amazon and Andes, you will be able to read all of my first-hand reports from Peru. And after I had finished my work on the situation in the rainforest, I headed on up into the Sierra, into the central mountains of Peru. And particularly the first place that I went was a high valley in just about the highest part of Peru between two mountain ranges, the Cordillera Blanca and the Cordillera Negra. The Cordillera Blanca, as you would imagine, is covered in snow and ice. And the valley between, and actually the Cordillera Blanca shelters the highest peak in Peru, Huascaran, which I believe is around, 20,000 feet or something. Very, very high altitude. It's very difficult to breathe there. Definitely felt the altitude. One of the most spectacularly beautiful places I've ever been. A lot of very, very harsh poverty, has to be said. And the Quechua indigenous culture is very, very deeply rooted there, very strong. And the name of this valley between the Cordillera Blanca and the Cordillera Negra is the Callejón de Huaylas in the department of Ancash. And let's hear a little bit of music from the Callejón de Huaylas in Ancash.
Qué linda es la música de mi tierra, el callejón de Huaylas. también. Por el camino que no conozco, con mi tristeza me marcharé. Por el camino que no conozco, con mi tristeza me marcharé. ¿Cuál has querido te dejo? Ay, te dejo por un amor. También dejo a mi madre, pero algún día regresaré. Me voy llevando tristes recuerdos desde mi barrio, la soledad. Me voy llevando tristes recuerdos desde mi barrio, la soledad. Nevado de lo Huascarán, no te nubles porque me voy. Alegra tu corazón, si no me muero, regresaré. Agüita clara del río Santa, quiero beberte por última vez. Agüita clara del río Santa, quiero beberte por última vez. Que mañana me voy sin rumbo a otro lugar, ya se fue el aborrecido, así todos comentarán. Nadie me detendrá cuando me vaya de aquí, solo mi perro aullará cuando me vea partir. Nadie me detendrá cuando me vaya de aquí, solo mi perro aullará cuando me vea partir.
Llora, llora, guaracino aborrecido, llora tu mala suerte, con sentimiento.
Llora.
Salud de esa cólera, segunda, hermano, adelante.
Tú bien sabes que me voy mañana, abre tu puerta para despedirme, dejarte de no para siempre, tener cuidado hasta mi vuelta. Despachadora, despacha ya, hasta el puente de Calicanto, se pintan aquí en Guacuyasha. Casada guapi, soltera guapi. Despachadora, despacha ya, hasta el puente de Calicanto, de Pitaná. Guacuyasha, casada guapi, soltera guapi. Eso sí, chinapa conciencia, eso sí, chinapa cariño. 8 soles tapan el cama, 15 soles tapicar a ti. Eso sí, chinapa conciencia, eso sí, chinapa cariño. 8 soles tapan el cama, 15 soles tapicar a ti.
Ay, ay, ay. ¡Guaracina! ¡Amma y bajetsu! ¡Arrastrada! ¡Despachadora! ¡Salud, salud! ¡Con los hermanos del Ande!
¡Chico, chico! ¡Sorsalito negro! ¡Qué bonito cantas! Saltando y brincando cuando va lloviendo. Muchacha sin esperanza, ¿por qué te apresuraste? Habiendo en este mundo tantos que te han querido. los barrios de Huaraz.
Viniste sin conciencia, chasco te habrá pasado, la herida me ha costado para conseguirte. Ingrata guaracina, guarda mi retrato, cuidado que lo pierdas como me has perdido. Piscot mi gusca manzana, así me gusta tu hermana. Piscot mi gusca manzana, así me gusta tu hermana.
¡Qué linda está la jarana! Con los hermanos delante. Al estilo de Huaraz. ¡Ay, ay, ay!
Hasta ya un chanque y un bizcocho, ese sí mi rosquita bañada. Hasta ya un chanque y un bizcocho, ese sí mi rosquita bañada. Achadita, 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 sobre tu achadita. Achadita, 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 mi abuelita sobre tu suelta.
¡Vamos con el sabadeo! ¡Muy bueno! Así, muchachos, como solo sabemos hacerlo los hermanos del ánimo. ¡Eso! ¡Vale! ¡Toma! ¡Lleva! ¡Ajá!
All right. A little bit of music from the Cajon de Huaylas. In Ancash department, the city there is Huaraz, way, way, way up in the mountains. A city which, has been repeatedly destroyed by natural disasters. I'll have a little bit more to say about that. First, let me identify the music. That was Los Hermanos del Ande with, their album, 20 años de música ancashina. Or 20 years of Ancashian music. And the musical director, and also the, I believe, the singer, and plays accordion and guitar, is Luis Alberto Salazar Mejia, who is a scholar. And teaches at the local university there in Huaraz, and is also involved in Proyecto URPI, which is the Unidad de Registro del Patrimonio Inmaterial de Ancash, basically a group which is dedicated to documenting the oral histories and folklore and music and that sort of thing of the region of Ancash, I had the pleasure of speaking with him, and he told me a little bit about the history of the region. There was an indigenous uprising in the Cajon de Huaylas in the year 1885, where an indigenous leader by the name of Pedro Pablo Atusparia, initially it was protesting about heavy taxes which were being levied on the indigenous communities. This was immediately after the War of the Pacific with Chile. And in order to, pay off war debts, the government was taxing the indigenous communities, the Quechua communities up in the mountains, very, very harshly. And when their protests were put down over this issue, they launched a general uprising and began, taking back the land and began redistributing the lands from the landed oligarchy to the indigenous campesinos up in the Cajon de Huaylas until there was a huge battle and the movement was finally crushed at a place called Yungay in April of 1885. Yungay, I took a guided tour, actually. I took a little sort of a tourist bus tour to the national park, which shelters Huascarán, the highest peak in Peru. And on the way, you stop through through you walk through the site of what's known as Viejo Yungay, which is a buried village, which is that's old Yungay, where 20,000 people instantly died when an earthquake loosed a glacier on the mountain and unleashed a massive avalanche. On May 31st of 1970, there was a circus in town that day, and the populace were taken unawares by this massive wall of mud, rock, and ice that just came descending down from the mountain onto them. The village was rebuilt as Nuevo Yungay, further down the slope, and the original site is today revered as sacred ground. Few of the bodies were ever discovered. And Huaraz itself was demolished in the same earthquake, which left a total of 70,000 people dead. Excuse me. But this was the second disaster to befall the city of Huaraz in the 20th century. Half of the city was destroyed and 5,000 residents killed when, once again, a flood originating in the glaciers overlooking the town, now we're talking about Huaraz, which is the regional capital in Ancash, flooded down a canyon into the city back in 1941. And that was not caused by an earthquake. That was just caused by a chunk of the glacier melting off. And guess what? NASA satellites have recently detected a crack in that very same glacier. There was another town by the name of Ranrahirka, which was also completely washed away by an avalanche from Huascarán, leaving 4,000 dead in 1962. So we can see, what happens when the, precarious balance of the high Andean ecology is disturbed. Very, very grim consequences. So if the ice pack that crowns the Cordillera Blanca is to be generally destabilized, well, the implications for the local residents and communities in the area are very, very obvious and very grim. So there aren't any global warming skeptics in Huaraz and the Callejón de Aylas, de Huaylas, as you might imagine. And in fact, José Antonio Salazar Mejía informs me that as recently as 15 years ago, there were, let's see, where have I got this? Right. As recently as 15 years ago, there were 270 glacial lakes up in the Cordillera Blanca. Today, there are 500. And the water is starting to disappear from the local river that runs through the valley, the Callejón de Huaylas, the Rio Santa. Already the impacts of global warming are being felt in this region. So, and one of the interesting things which Don José Antonio Salazar Mejía told me is that back in 1985, for the 100th anniversary, the centenary celebration of the Campesino uprising in the Callejón de Huaylas, he wrote a song in honor of the revolutionary leader Pedro Pablo Atusparia, who was a Quechua campesino from the village of Marian. And the song included the following verse: Se podría secar el río Santa, se deshielará la cordería, pero el camino que va a Marian no se olvidará de Atusparia. Which translates as, the Rio Santa could run dry, the snow disappear from the Cordillera, but the road that goes to Marian will not forget Atusparia. And what Salazar Mejia told me was that when he wrote that song, people laughed at him. You know, they said, oh, the ice and the snow are eternal. Nothing could ever destroy them. But now, 25 years later, what I wrote is becoming a reality. That's what he told me. So, once again, there's no global warming skeptics in Huaraz and the Callejón de Islas. They, did I get that right? Huaylas, Huaylas, Callejón de Huaylas. So why don't we hear a little bit of that song? Why don't we hear a little bit of that song, Atusparia, Sangre Viva, in honor of the revolutionary leader of the Callejón de Huaylas from 1885, written by José Antonio Salazar Mejía on the centenary of the uprising in 1985. Okay, that is cut 9, and let's give it a listen.
En 1835 surgió en Marián el más potente grito de la clase indígena. Desde allí bajaron a Huaraz miles de corazones henchidos de furia, exigiendo justicia para el hombre de campo.
Por el camino que va Marián hay un recuerdo que no se borra. Allí derramó llanto de sangre el rebelde caudillo Atusparia. Allí derramó llanto de sangre el rebelde caudillo Atusparia.
Atusparia, tu ejemplo lo han seguido líderes de la talla de Macedonio Lir León, Justiniano Minaya Sosa y Pablo Villanueva. Y surgirán miles como tú, mientras que el campesino sufra la miseria, la explotación y el hambre.
Se podrá secar el río Santa, se deshielará la cordillera, pero el camino que va a marear no se olvidará nunca de Atusparia. Se podrá secar el río Santa, se deshielará la cordillera, pero el camino que va a marear no podrá olvidar nunca Atusparia. Cuando quieras ir a marear, Huaracinita de mi amor, y Dios clavel de rojo recogerás, sangre viva de Atusparia recogerás. Cuando quieras ir a marear, Huaracinita de mi amor, y Dios clavel de rojo recogerás, sangre viva de Atusparia recogerás.
Para ti, hermano campesino, los hermanos del Ande, con emoción y sentimiento. Ahora, muchachos.
All right, a little bit more from José Antonio Salazar Mejía. And his Los Hermanos del Ande de Huaraz, con 20 años de música ancashina. Let's see, I've just got 10 minutes left. I should wrap this up. So let's see. After a few days in the War Oz area, okay, the Cordillera Blanca, which includes the highest mountains in Peru, is immediately to the east of the Cajon de Huaylas and War Oz. Immediately to the west is the Cordillera Negra, which is a little bit lower. As you would imagine, the Cordillera Blanca has got snow, and the Cordillera Negra does not, but still very, very high. That is really the dividing Sierra between the dividing Cordillera between the Sierra of Peru, the central mountains, and the coastal deserts. So after a few days in Huaraz, my photographer, who I worked with down in Peru, Eric Claudio, took me over the Cordillera Negra to a little village where his grandparents come from, by the name of Aija, which is the name of the village derives from an Inca war cry. The original spelling was with an X when it would have been pronounced Aisha, which I believe that was actually an Inca war cry. So that's the name of the village today. When we arrived there, we walked around late at night. We arrived there late at night on the bus coming over the Cordillera Negra. And really, you know, the bus is the village's lifeline, because the village was really kind of dying on the vine there. So Eric tells me, for about a generation, and even now all the young people are leaving, as you might imagine. When, you know, the bus started coming through, thanks to the mining boom in the region, you know, more traffic on the road, it sort of, you know, spawned a little bit of a secondary economy, people opening up hospedajes and little restaurants and so on for the bus traffic that comes through. So the bus line is really, it's the village's economic lifeline. It's way, way out in the middle of nowhere. And nothing around it but what they call the Puna, which is, you know, the real high, desolate Andean region where it's very, very dry, no trees, just windswept, mountain and plateau sort of landscape. So the first thing we did when we walked around there late at night when we arrived was we went to the municipal radio station where we met David Cacha Robles, who works at the municipal radio station and is also one of the musicians in the village band of Mavaiha, which is called Armonia Vertientina. Armonia Vertientina. He gave me a disc. Actually, he gave me a cassette. They're old school like me in Aija. They still use cassettes. But Max Schmid here at the station at BAI generously gave of his time and labor for me to transfer it to a disc. So why don't we hear a little bit of it? Here's a shout-out to all of my good buds up in the village of Aija who are listening on the Internet tonight. Aquí es algo de tu música, mis amigos. Armonia Vertientina de Aija. Let's hear cut one.
De la provincia de Aija, el conjunto musical Armonía Vertientina dedica esta danza a los pueblos de la serpiente.
A little bit of Armonia Veritientina from Aiha, way, way, way up in the mountains, a little village way, way, way up in the mountains in the Cordillera Negra de Ancash. So, and as I mentioned, the lifeline, the economic lifeline of this village is the bus line that runs through it, and they've actually the fourth cut on this record is Carrito Azul, which is an homage to the blue bus that runs through the village, which is proudly featured right here on the cover of the album. So why don't we hear a little bit of, once again, this is Armonia Vertientina from Aiha, Ancash, Peru, with Carrito Azul. I believe that is cut 4.
Carrito azul, apóstol Santiago, que recorre el Aijaguará. Apúrate que viajaremos al pueblo de la Merced. Mi Mercedina desesperada quizás se ponga a llorar, quizás se ponga a llorar. Pasando la Trinidad, qué bello es al amanecer. Derrama el eucalipto volando con ansiedad. Ay, qué sorpresa nos da la vida, al mandito no estaba allá, donde el precio no estaba allá. Yo necesito pisco jamones, vámonos de este lugar. Entre la pluma de tus salientes nadie nos descubrirá. Quiero empezar mi vida de nuevo, que hasta la fecha me va a tardar, que hasta la fecha me va a tardar. ¡Música!
Ah, desafortunadamente casi necesito ir y por eso necesito decir en este tiempo muchos saludos y muchas gracias a todos mis amigos que están escuchando esta noche en el internet en Perú y especialmente la familia de Don Thomas Moore en Lima. Gracias por su hospitalidad. Mi buen amigo y excelente fotógrafo, Eric Claudio.
Please remember that this program is supported by the listener members of WBAI New York. If you like what you hear, please consider becoming a member of WBAI or renewing if you've already joined. Basic membership is $25, but we accept any amount. Help us keep free speech alive.